Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. We're going to start the day today by going underground a little bit, talking with you about caves and mines and tunnels in and around the Badger State. We'll zero in a little bit on Cave of the Mounds in Blue Mounds, Wisconsin, because Joe Klimchek is with us. Joe is with the Cave of the Mounds at Blue Mounds. It's located on Blue Mounds Road, just... How far is that?
It's just about 20 minutes west of Madison.
Yeah,
just go straight out Highway 18, and we're right off of
the
highway.
And actually, with the new road and that, it's a pretty quick trip from the Madison area, that's for sure. Doris Green with us as well. Doris, hi.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Nice to have you back. Doris is author of Wisconsin Underground. It's published by Trails Book. And lots of fascinating information about the caves, including Cave of the Mounds, and many others, as well as you get some other sections in the book as well.
Mines, tunnels, and all sorts of underground structures.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to read through and see what all is there. If you'd like to join in, if you have some questions about Cave of the Mounds or any cave in particular, or maybe you're planning a trip in some part of the state and want to know what you might find in the way of caves or other tunnels or mines, why, we'd certainly welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Let's talk about caves for just a minute to begin the show. How was a cave actually formed? What happens? Joe, can you take that?
I sure can. It's in rock like we've got mostly in Wisconsin here, limestone rock, which is a relatively soft rock. It's a sedimentary rock. That means it's pretty easily eroded. So there's two kinds of erosion. There's mechanical erosion, that's water flowing and wearing away rock, or chemical erosion. That's weak acids and stronger acids that naturally occur underground that gradually dissolve out little holes that kind of start along bedding planes and cracks that occur naturally in the rock, and expand those, and then later on that flowing water gradually wears away the rock some more until you wind up with a hole in the rock big enough for a person to be in, and that's how we define a cave.
That's how we define a cave, and something like Cave of the Mounds has been under construction, so to speak, for a long, long time then.
Yeah, for a couple million years. Between 1 and 2 million years ago, Cave of the Mounds started forming, and it began when the water table, the local water table, was much higher than it is today, and the rock there was saturated, and that, it's rainwater that mixes with carbonic acid, and that will dissolve limestone to a small degree. That's just natural carbon dioxide in the soil. But there's also lead deposits. You know, Wisconsin, southwestern Wisconsin, is known for some of its lead deposits. The first settlers out in this area in 1828 or so came for a lead rush. And it's those lead deposits that are usually tied up with some sulfur, and that sulfur, when it mixes with water, forms a hydrogen sulfide gas or sulfuric acid, a very strong acid, and that's what starts dissolving away that limestone and expanding that cavern, to the point where the water flowing can erode it some more.
Now, you mentioned the minerals, the lead and so forth, and Doris, in your book, you can talk a little bit about, there are quite a few of those underground areas that we can observe.
Well, there are a lot more that you can't observe.
There are a lot more than you can, that's for sure.
There are certainly some public sites at Platteville and Potosi, for instance. But there are many, many remnants of mines still left underground in the southwest, that part of the state, that are partially lost over time. I know that within the last number of months, there was a sinkhole that opened up in downtown Dodgeville. And it was because there was a mine tunnel beneath it that people had simply forgotten about.
Mm.
And so the area is certainly certainly full of tunnels.
How did you get interested in caves and tunnels and that sort of thing, underground things?
As a child, on a visit to the Cave of the Mounds, I was just fascinated. I must have been just quite at the right age for something like that to really make an impact. It reminded me of going out at night and lying on your back on the grass and looking up at the stars. It was just so immense. At least it seemed that immense to me. I must have been 8 or 9, and it just really made an impression.
And Joe, how about you? How did you get interested in caves?
You know, it's funny. It's, you know, some kids dream about being a veterinarian or a fireman, and I had always thought I'd love to work at a national park, be, you know, a park ranger of some sort. And so when an opportunity came around to be involved with some places as incredible as Cave of the Mounds, it was really something. For me, it was a visit to Cave of the Mounds years earlier also that had really made me fascinated with it. But, you know, I'll joke with people sometimes, say, oh, I always dreamed of running a cave when I grew up, which there's obviously very few people who get to do that. But this, so it wasn't a lifelong aspiration. But when an opportunity came up, it's just such a wonderful place that I thought, great place to be involved.
There's a good story about how Cave of the Mounds was actually discovered.
It is. We're sort of very fortunate that Cave of the Mounds was discovered very recently, in 1939, actually on August 4th. So the anniversary is coming up in just a week. On August 4th, 1939, quarry workers were performing a routine quarry blast. They were drilling some holes, packed in some black powder, and set off their charge. And they were doing it to break up the big chunks of limestone and the rock face into smaller chunks so they could use it for gravel for the local roads. And they did this on August 4th, 1939, and were astounded that when the dust settled, there was a large hole in the bottom of the quarry. And they kind of gathered up their courage. They decided they were going to wait for 3 days before they went in because they were just, you know, very, very frightened. This was a big hole. And they actually waited for 3 hours. They couldn't wait very long. And they went down and began exploring what is now Cave of the Mounds National Natural Landmark.
And it is a national landmark.
It certainly is, yes. Since 1988, it was the National Park Service and the Department of the Interior gave it that prestige, that recognition, because it really is a very significant cave, especially in an area like the upper Midwest, where because of the glaciers that we had cover most of Wisconsin, there's really very few caves that aren't either squashed flat by the glaciers or covered with sand and filled in with sand and gravel by those glacial movement.
And you have some, you mentioned that in a week is the anniversary, and you've got some events that tied up with that anniversary, or tied into it, I should say.
Yeah, we do. We celebrate the anniversary, sort of the birthday of the cave, the anniversary of the discovery of the cave, and every year we have different events. And this year we've got some special things going on. We're going to have some special tours where the first part of the tour will be with flashlights. We'll give flashlights to the visitors, and they get to go down and kind of experience what it would have been like for those first explorers. Now, of course, now there's pavement and hand railings and mm-hmm. you know, walkways throughout, which the first explorers didn't have.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. But so we go through and kind of recreate that magical discovery feeling to find something, you know, crystal-filled halls, you know, so unexpectedly. And then the second part of the tour will be the regular with the theatrical lighting system. But then we've also got some free things for the kids. We've got another activity above ground. We call it our gemstone mine and fossil dig. You know, if you tell kids here we're going to learn something, they kind of shy away a little bit. But if you can make it really fun for them, they have so much fun they don't realize they're learning something. So we give all of the kids a little bag of mining rough, which is sand that's been seeded with gemstones or fossils, and then they can wash it sort of like panning for gold, and they get to keep everything they find, and we help them identify what they found. So there's little bits of amethyst or emerald or pyrite and things like that. So they'll do that as well. And we've got some other exhibits, and a naturalist and falconer who lives just up the road is going to be there for some flying demonstrations with his birds. And there'll be some other activities, too.
And so when is that?
That is Saturday and Sunday, this coming Saturday and Sunday, which is August 4th and 5th.
Mm-hmm. And the hours for that?
We are open from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m., 7 days a week. The tours depart about every 20 minutes or so. We're actually open all year round, so we're open daily all year round. But 9 a.m. till the last tour departs at 6 p.m.
Let's take some calls. But if you'd like to join in, by the way, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area at 263-1890, talking caves and mines and tunnels in and around the Badger State, zeroing in a little bit on Cave of the Mounds today with our two guests, Joel Klimchek and Doris Green. And again, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Bill in Wisconsin Dells, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yo, this is for Joel.
Yes.
So I was just wondering about handicap accessibility in the cave. Can you get wheelchairs in there? Is it ramped such that so people wanted to come over there?
Thanks for calling, Bill. That's a good question. And, you know, there's there's some restrictions within the cave because of the tight passageways that there's just not possible for a wheelchair to get in. There are some stairways which aren't steep for people just walking down, but what we do have, all the buildings are, of course, accessible, and there's an introductory video that people in wheelchairs could watch, and then there's the initial entry platform where they can go and see that first part of the cave, so they can see the cave and enjoy that initial part without actually having to go down the stairs or down into the cave into some of those little tighter passageways.
And that initial part is fairly impressive, too.
It really is. You get to see in both directions. There's a room that's about 100 feet long with a 30-foot high ceiling and 30 feet wide, the South Cavern. And then you can also look in the other direction and see the North Cavern. So you can see a fair bit from that sort of mezzanine that was built right there where the initial discovery blast took place.
Are these caves similar to the ones like in Kentucky, Tennessee, the limestone, like down there?
They are limestone caves, and they're filled with those similar formations. A lot of those down in Kentucky, for example, Mammoth Cave has got a cap rock that prevents a lot of crystal formations from forming, whereas we've got lots and lots of these crystal stalactites and stalagmites and dripstone and all sorts of really wonderful formations. But it is a limestone cave similar to those down there.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Fort Atkinson, you're next. Hi, Pat.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I enjoy this. when I was young, when I was a Girl Scout, we got to camp in a cave called Eagle Cave. And I wondered if that was still in operation. And in the back of the cave, the very back of the cave, there was a Jesus Saves written on the wall. I wondered if that was still around.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Eagle Cave. Doris Green, what about it?
Well, the cave is sure still there, and, you know, I don't remember a Jesus Saves sign, so my guess is that someone has cleaned it off. That cave is really noted for often having Boy Scout and Girl Scout groups and occasional sleepovers, but it's definitely still in operation down near Muscadet and Blue River.
Cool.
Oh, okay, because Jesus Saves was starting to be covered with the cave, and I just wondered if it was still there or if it had already become part of the cave.
Probably became part of the cave.
That must be.
All right.
Do they still have Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts camp there?
You would need to call the cave specifically and ask.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And you have in your book, Doris, do you have contact information for folks in the book?
Yes, each section does have a contact, and you can also find additional information about caves on the Wisconsin Speleological Society website, which you can find. It's not too complex by going to www.caves.org and then looking for a link to the Wisconsin Grotto.
Okay. Thanks again, Pat, for calling. Appreciate it. Mary Kay in Danville, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning.
Morning.
I really enjoy listening to you over the net every day at work.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm a transplant from the Madison area. I wanted to find out if you folks were aware that there's still a member of that original blasting crew living in Platteville.
I guess I'm not sure that I was aware of that. That's interesting. What, do you know their name?
I do, but I'd rather give it to you off the air.
I'll tell you what, through our website at www.caveofthemounds.com, you can either send me an email, there's a link on there, or else perhaps the person off the air can take the name. That would be very interesting to me.
Yes, I think it would be just wonderful if you could find a way to integrate him into your weekend here this week. He's 89, I think.
Well, Mary Kay, it's interesting you should mention that right now. We're in the process of producing a new video, kind of the introductory information, and we're trying to get a little bit of an oral history of some of these people that were around when the cave was first discovered. And we've talked to several of them already, but it's very opportune, the timing of your call, because we are interested in kind of trying to track down some of these people while they're still around.
Great. And I'm sorry, I don't have your name right handy.
Oh, my name is Joe Klimczak. I'm the general manager at Cave of the Mounds.
Oh, okay. All right. So the email would go to you.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll try. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And what's your website again?
It's caveofthemounds.com, www.caveofthemounds.com. And Doris mentioned the link to the WSS, the Wisconsin Speleological Society. It's a mouthful. that there's a link on our website as well. If they want to go to the other attractions section, there's a nice link to them there too.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mary Kay, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking today with Joe Klimczak of the Cave of the Mounds and Doris Green of Spring Green, Wisconsin, who is author of Wisconsin Underground. It's published by Trails Books. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking caves, mines, and tunnels today, zeroing a bit more on the caves with our two guests, Joe Klimczak of Cave of the Mounds and Doris Green, of author of Wisconsin Underground. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call if you have a question or want to know about caves that may be in areas or underground areas that might be where you're planning to vacation or maybe where you live near. Susan in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hello, I have a question, and I'd take the answer off the air. I'm just wondering if there is a group that a person can call to explore sinkholes and an open crevice as to whether or not there is a cave below.
Oh.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Is there a group, Doris, that you know that would be willing to do that or that does that?
Well, you definitely need to make contact with the Wisconsin Speleological Society. And I think I would start with their website and look for an email to get started as a first step.
Okay. And what's the website again?
It's through the National Speleological Society, which is caves.org, and then /grotto/WSS. But you can just go to caves.org also and look for a link to Wisconsin.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. That's the kind of a professional group, is it not, Joe?
Exactly. You know, very hobbyists and professionals who make it their business to explore caves and help with restoration projects or the projects with Doris and I were talking about earlier, removing mud from some new passageways we've discovered. And Susan brings up a good point that it's not the kind of thing, if you find a cave, you're out wandering in the woods, you really don't want to go inside of a cave. You know, there's some that are just a few feet deep, but there's some that are further, and they can be very dangerous. And there's kind of a big distinction between a show cave, like Cave of the Mounds National Natural Landmark, that's set up for tours. We've got experienced guides, walkways, lighting, and caves you'd find out in the woods, which can be a lot more adventure than most people are prepared for. You need to have multiple light sources and really know the cave. You wouldn't want to get lost inside and, for obvious reasons.
Yep, for obvious reasons. Rich in Richland Center, it's your turn. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. Thank you.
You bet. What can we do for you?
Well, I've been listening with interest to this discussion on caves because for 35 years I taught geology in the Richland Center High School. And while doing that, we explored many caves in the area. And I was also the director of an all-girl marching unit, and we would take many, many summer trips. And on these trips, I would always give the kids an experience that they never had here in Richland Center. And one of those experiences was visiting caves, like Wind Cave out in Custer Park in South Dakota, and Luray Caverns in Virginia. Now, that one gave us an experience I had never had before.
How so?
When we were in there, we were told that we were going to listen to music, the kind of which we had never heard before. So in one room that was just loaded with stalactites, pretty soon we heard this weird, eerie music. And we found out that they had attached a hammer, like a mallet, like a piano hammer, to many, many, many stalactites, and they were all pitched to a certain key, to a certain note on the octave. And all of these little hammers were attached to a keyboard. And when that keyboard was played, it was really, really a neat sound coming from that cave.
That's amazing. I've never heard of anything quite like that. Joe?
I know the folks from Luray. I don't believe they do that anymore. You know, the thing about caves is those formations are made out of crystal. So even though they're made out of stone, it's sort of like your mom's fine china. You really got to be extremely careful with them. You know, very, very fragile. And they take so long to grow. Cave formations grow at a rate of about 1 cubic inch per 100 years on average. That's about the size of a campfire marshmallow in 100 years. So they're really so fragile that if you were to accidentally break one, it's something that in generations and generations will, you know, still take a long time to grow back. So it's so important to remember when inside caves that they're really a fragile underground treasure and something that's got to be conserved.
Yeah, and Rich certainly wouldn't have done this, but Doris, I know as well, you're concerned about defacing or writing and so forth inside of caves.
Right. It's kind of a balance between allowing public access to places that really are true treasures and limiting access. And that's why it's important to work with groups as opposed to, you know, going on your own and inadvertently sometimes causing damage.
And with all the graffiti and so forth that we see on railroad cars and sides of buildings and so forth, that's obviously something you don't want to see in a cave.
Right. We've got plenty of graffiti already. But Rich makes a good point. You know, when traveling across the country, caves are one of these things that, you know, you don't see them from a long ways away because they're underground and hidden, but they're really something to seek out. When there are show caves around, like Wind Cave is a national park, and or Luray, and there's a number of caves around the nation that can be toured, and it's really something on a family vacation that's such a great activity for families to do, to go and tour. Each one is different. There's different aspects of everyone, and you know, the different formative processes or different process, you know, different types of formations. So it's really, really a special kind of family experience.
Yeah. Rich, thanks.
Oh, you betcha.
Appreciate it very much. Warren and Zitto, your turn now. Hi, Warren.
Hi. I'm having a little trouble hearing you, but can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay. No, it's the cave that I went in that I think nobody else has ever gone in it, and because I hit it after a while. But it's between Spring Green and Black Hawk, because there's a lady there from Spring Green, so she should know where Black Hawk is. And on our farm, there are three caves, but some of the others, somebody has been in them. And I think there's a cave in that area that the University of Wisconsin brings its students out to explore in geology class. And that's also in that area. But what I'm calling for is that experience of being the first to enter one is one of the high points of my life. And but I couldn't get, I had trouble getting anybody to go with me. And finally my mother, bless her, came with me, and we put a rope around me and took some candles. And the biggest thing I had to watch out for was rattlesnakes, because they would be using these caves, because there's all kinds of rattlesnakes in that area. I grew up with rattlesnakes. But I went in about 80 to 90 feet, and then the top of the ceiling and the floor met. But it's one of those things that if you are, and I'm not 100% certain that I'm the only one, but I think that's the case. And then afterwards, I don't know if I just said this or not, we covered it up and so that we wanted it to stay untouched.
Thanks for calling. Comment?
Sounds like a really neat experience. I know what he's talking about. Some of that, you know, when you go down and you're underground and this, it's just a whole different world, and especially to be the first or only, boy, that's really a special experience.
Doris, have you done, you've obviously been in a lot of caves yourself and done a little bit of this too.
Not much wild caving, but I am aware that there are many small caves on many farms in the southwest part of the state. And it's not unusual. I don't think that anyone actually has done a complete count of what's out there. And part of the allure for a lot of folks is finding something like that and looking and seeking and ridge walking and finding something that no one else has seen before.
Absolutely. Warren, thank you. Appreciate your call very much. Tom and Verona, I think it's your turn next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Say, I want to ask about Richardson Cave off a highway, Midtown Highway. It's out near me, and I heard different stories about it. Like when it was first discovered, you could drive a wagon into it, and people putting dyes in to see where it went. Unfortunately, it's a wet cave, and it's been silted in quite a bit. And I wonder if there's any chance of ever cleaning that out or something.
I don't really know that much about it, but I certainly have read a little about it, and I think that it was at some risk because it is fairly close to some increasingly developed areas, but I don't have a recent update on it.
Okay, thanks very much for calling. There are some stories, and you have some stories in your book that are connected with caves in one way or another. I know there was a cave that a family hid in to sort of escape being taken to the insane asylum.
That would be Governor Dodge State Park, and that's actually has some truth to it. There are, of course, also many tall tales that now you read them and you have no idea if there was a kernel of truth there or not. Within the last couple weeks, I was rereading the book Wisconsin by August Derleth, and he talks about Bogus Bluff, which supposedly hid counterfeiters. And Bogus Bluff is near the city of Gotham, west of Lone Rock. And there apparently were some quite credible reports of counterfeiters being in that area at one point.
And I know there are stories about robbers who hid gold and silver and so forth and in the caves that I remember you telling. And those, of course, many different versions of those stories for the same area.
Many, and there also are stories about, people seeing ghosts and odd lights, either in caves or in even some in mines, where the ghost of a dead miner is illuminating the sky or the drift, whatever.
On to Bernard in Sparta. Hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. You always have the best shows.
Thank you.
And the most interesting guests. I'm in my mid-60s here, and I can remember my grandfather telling my brother and I that when he was a lad, they lived on a farm down near Wazika, and that's in the Prairie du Chien area somewhere. And he said they were out exploring, he and his brothers, one day when they had some time, and they found a opening in a hill. And they went in there. Well, it was you had to climb down a little bit, but there was a great big room, and there was another ledge, and it lowered down to another great big room. And so they went back up to the farm and got three hay ropes and a carbon light and tried to get to the bottom of the third big room, but it was so dark or so deep that the lights went out, and they ran out of rope, so they had to give it up. But when they first went in there, they found a whole bunch of Indian and Native American artifacts. And I was just wondering if any of your guests had heard about that very deep cave with those three large rooms.
It's because you said Wazika, that's very close, of course, to Kickapoo Indian Caverns, which is a commercial cave, and apparently there were some Native American artifacts in the upper levels of that cave. So it's an intriguing story. I think that that those caverns, have been known by man for quite some time. And so I'm not sure. It makes me wonder if there's another cave nearby with the same kind of characteristics, or if perhaps you may have been talking about that cave.
This would have probably been around 1910 or 1915 when they were lads.
Yeah, long time back. And
he said they never got to the bottom of the third level. He said it was just too. And then of course they just had carbon lights and there wasn't enough oxygen apparently to keep them going. And they ran out of rope. And so I was just wondering if anybody had ever discovered that yet.
Sounds like Kickapoo Indian Caverns, maybe.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
It sure would.
Well, thank you, Larry, again for such great shows.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Bernie. Appreciate it. And Ann in Madison, I believe it's your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. About 3 years ago, I went to the Wyalusing State Park along the Mississippi cliffs, near Prairie du Chien, and there is a path that leads through the woods. It gets narrower and narrower. It's cut into the cliff, and then all of a sudden I saw a sign for cave. I can't remember whether they'd named it, and I kept going, and on a ledge there was a ladder with, say, 30 rungs or something. It looked a little rickety, but I climbed up, and there was a rock ledge there that was on a slight incline. It was rather slippery, and at the end of the ledge, which was about 20 feet wide, there was that was the cave. And I was so afraid I was just going to slip right off. I didn't even have any matches, you know, much less ropes or anything. But it looked like a really interesting cave. I wonder if you know anything about that cave.
All right. Doris Green?
It's one of my favorite spots. It's Treasure Cave.
Oh, yeah.
And what I really like about that one, and there are other caves that have this feature, but not in that area, and is that when you get to the top and there's a little room, there's actually a window so that you can look out from the cave onto the confluence of the Mississippi and Wisconsin rivers, and it's a spectacular view.
Yeah. It looked like a little dangerous. You know, I didn't see any sign saying, you know, enter at your own risk or this ladder might fall off the cliff or something like that.
It's definitely part of the developed state park, but there are it's not certainly an accessible part of the park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Ann.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Joel, comment?
Well, there's some other features about caves along those bluffs by the Mississippi River. You've maybe had Dr. Richard Slaughter from the UW Geology Museum on your show, Larry. He did some work, I know, looking at Ice Age fossils inside caves, and you can really find a lot of interesting information about what our climate was and what the species were that were around, because these animals would have taken shelter inside the caves, and then since they're not subject to the same erosion that the surface is, they get protected, and as the sediments build up in the floor of that cave year after year, and you can kind of, as you go down deeper, you go down back further and further in time. And can kind of do some interesting, you know, there's a lot of little secrets about the past that can be divined from looking carefully at either the sediments in caves or different things that may be, you know, pollen grains that are deposited inside the stalactites and stalagmites. And so some interesting study that can be done with caves.
Very cool. Thanks again, Ann. Appreciate it. And Jim in Baskerville, we go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Say, this is really bringing back memories for me when I was a kid. And when we were teenagers, there was a cave north of Baskerville, and we used to take our little flashlights with D-cell batteries and a hay rope and drop down to this hole in the ground. And I think about it now, it scares the dickens out of me, because nobody knew where we were at. And these little, all it would have taken is to drop this flashlight, and we never would have been seen above ground again. But, you know, I've heard so many of these, and I know of another place that we always stop hunting and warm our hands because there's a crack in the rock that warm air comes out. Is there caves in southwest Wisconsin around the Baskerville Wazeek area? I hear that come up a lot. Do you think there's caves there still to be discovered?
Oh, I think certainly. You know, the southwest corner of the state was not covered by glaciers the way most of Wisconsin was. So as a result, we still have quite a lot of caves. We've got that karst topography. That's limestone. It's kind of like a Swiss cheese rock, lots and lots of holes in it. And you know, some of these are just little cracks that never amount to very, very much, and some of them are larger caves. So it very well could be that there's some caves still there to be discovered. And it's interesting him talking about warming his hands in the wintertime.
Yeah, well, what's that all about?
Well, you know, the caves maintain a constant temperature all year round, or very close to a constant temperature. They're far enough underground that they take on the average temperature. So Cave of the Mounds, for example, is 50 degrees every day of the year, you know, plus or minus just a little bit. So people think of it, you know, a great day like this, it's an excellent place to be because it's very nice and cool, natural air conditioning. But in the wintertime, it's still 50 degrees, and we're open all year round. It really feels balmy down there in the wintertime. We go down and do different lighting repairs, and it's with that humidity and then the 50-degree temperature, it actually feels like a nice warm, change to what's outside. So they certainly, you know, that's why the Native Americans or other people took shelter in caves, you know, when other shelter wasn't available.
No, actually, makes a lot of sense. Thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate your call very much. You can join us, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking caves today and a little bit about mines and tunnels with our two guests, Joe Klimczak of the Cave of the Mounds, and also Doris Green of Spring Green, author of Wisconsin Underground. And maybe, Doris, you could I should ask you to sort of explain how your book is organized.
There are three basic sections. One would be caves, and the other is mines and tunnels. And mines in Wisconsin included several lead mines in the southwest part of the state, and there are some opportunities still for tours of those underground mines. And then the book also ranges up into the Upper Michigan Peninsula, or Upper Michigan area, because there are some mine tours available there also, where people today can get a sense of what it was like to be mining in the 18th century for iron or copper.
And Joe, I want to go back to you for a minute, too, because just to remind people, if you tuned in late, that kind of a nice event coming up this weekend on the anniversary of the discovery of the mine.
That's exactly right. Cave of the Mounds was discovered by accident on August 4th, 1939, in a quarry blast. So we're going to celebrate that by kind of reliving some of that. There won't be any explosions, but we will just be using the flashlights through part of the tour and having some free gemstones and fossils for the kids, for them, for everybody that goes on the tour to get to enjoy that. And then we've also got a fairly new discovery center there on the grounds. We've got a barn that was built in 1883, by Ebenezer Brigham and his family when he first settled there. And we've converted this barn into a discovery center where we have different natural history exhibits, and we hold a lot of scout programs and youth programs, school field trips and things like that up there. So it's kind of some neat exhibits up there. And one of the things this weekend will be a falconer who will have his hawks there.
Very cool. That's Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday,
and
yes.
The times on that again?
From 9 a.m. till, we're actually open till 7 p.m., but the tours depart up until 6 p.m., about 1 hour guided tours.
And for a look at your website.
Oh, www.caveofthemounds.com. And on there's directions where to find us. We're just 20 minutes west of Madison, right off the four-lane highway, Highway 18 and 151. And, open 7 days a week all year round.
And Doris, for a copy of your book is available lots of places, I would think, but certainly it would be easy enough to order from Trails Books.
Right, and that is also has a website, just trailsbooks.com. And I should mention, we're talking about Wisconsin, but there is a complete series, and there also is a book on Minnesota caves and a book on Iowa caves.
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate both of you being with us, and good luck with your anniversary this weekend, Joe.
Well, Larry, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for having me.
And Doris, great to have you back as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joe Klimczak, who is with the Cave of the Mounds at Blue Mounds, Wisconsin. Go to the caveofthemounds.com, take a look at the cave itself. You'll get some views of that. Plus, you'll find out some more about what's going on this weekend. Doris Green of Spring Green, Wisconsin, is author of Wisconsin Underground, published by Trails Books. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking weather here with our weather guy, Steve Ackerman. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.